Mine isn't so as organized as I'd like it to be. As was mentioned earlier, I'm involved with campus ministry, and this is the beginning of Dead Week at Iowa State, and I have a friend who's a senior, and he is doing what they call the extreme insanity workout. Yeah, my sister-in-law and my brother are doing that. And so at Thanksgiving when they were there, I thought, that looks insane. It's like, yeah, it is. He was doing this, and he kind of was pretty stiff and sore, and he's a young dude that's way younger than me by a long shot. And he said, can I come over and use your hot tub? And I said, sure, come on over, Matt. And so he came over, and he said, you want to talk for a while? And I thought there might be a thing. And so I sat in the hot tub with him, and so 2 hours of my time that I had planned for organizing things didn't happen quite the way I was planning, but that's okay. I know some of you guys from years gone by. I've tried to meet a number of you guys here, and I didn't get a chance to meet everybody. I'm going to give you a little bit of who I am, just to kind of know, you know, here's the journey. Here's the path that God's been leading me on for 30-plus years now since I went to Iowa State and became a Christian. And then I want to set the table, per se, as, you know, feel free if I say something that doesn't make sense to you, let me know. Now, I was talking with Sarah a little bit earlier, and she was talking about doing things relating to closings and preparing documents for real estate. I have lived in that world, and I reside in that world, so I knew exactly what she was talking about, and I asked her a couple questions. Well, you know, if they move the closing date back here, you know, this and this and this happens, because I've been through that. And so I may talk in a world that doesn't make sense. Let me know. Define that. Explain that more. Help me so I can talk with you, not at you, with you in a way that really connects to help you take a next step forward. There's a verse in Corinthians I really, really like. It says, learning what is pleasing unto the Lord. And that's my journey. I'm learning today. One step, left, right, oops, back, left, right, you know, what is pleasing to God. And it's a day-by-day journey of figuring out how to order my life before God to bring greater glory to Him and to bring blessing to those around me. So I want to set the table that way. Say, you know, hey, this doesn't make sense. What do you mean by this? Let me know. Be glad to stop interacting. I want it more interactive. Well, that's just my style, I guess. That's who God made me. So, okay. The handout, I'm going to go over a few things just kind of on my story, and then I'm going to jump into the handout because I want to give you something. If we don't have enough time, I've listened to Brad before. He might take most of the time. And so I was prepared just in case, and he did a great job. And my normal format is, I do a lot of Bible studies and stuff where we kind of gather around in a circle, and I'm not the upfront type of guy necessarily. Yes, I can do it. It's not my preferred format and stuff. So my preferred format is interactive. Let me know what's connecting, what's not. Eh, you're way off base. Okay, fine, that's fine. We'll just move on then. So that's kind of the format I'd like this morning. Work to me is an opportunity to interact and bring good to the people and culture around me. Now, I'm going to give you a little bit of background, how I got to that point, what caused me to think that way. The emails early on from Tim and Bob and Brad were, Doug could talk about dignity, nobility. And I responded to that, like, what? You know, dignity and nobility are not something that's normally in my vocabulary. I had to look them up. So here's what they came up with. I said, if Brad gave me these words, I got to figure out what they mean, you know, if that's what I'm supposed to talk about. It's bearing conduct or manner indicative of self-respect or formality or gravity. That's dignity. Nobility was a quality being excellent or rare. Well, I think I've learned some things in those areas, and I'm still learning more in that, but that's just the Google the words, and that's what you get. So it's a process. It's a process. And what's involved, I wanted to pass on. Here's at least what I've learned in this process of building some dignity or a life that's worth following. Now, I work for a multi-billion dollar company, and Tim mentioned EMC, and actually wastewater plants is something we insure a lot of, so I've been on site and seen what is done there through the different processes, and I'm really glad that there's other people that do that work because it's really needed, that sort of thing. But I grew up in a small town in Southeast Iowa, and I grew up where I've got three younger brothers, and my dad and mom, mom turned 80 this year, and my dad is still doing one of the things that modeled, now my dad didn't do everything right, but he modeled hard work. My dad at 80 years old is still working part-time today. And he drives a route, and he actually comes not too far from Decorah once a week. And he used to do it three times a week after he retired from he was an accountant for the Iowa Army Ammunition Plant in Southeast Iowa, close, middle town, close between Burlington and Danville and New London, along that area there, along Highway 34. And after he got laid off from his job, after being there for 38 years, he worked three part-time jobs, and then he ended up beginning to work for this company that delivers its hog semen to farmers along throughout. Don't know where else but Iowa. And he would drive, initially he would drive 3 days a week, 500 to 550 miles a day. Now he's driving one route, and now and then he'll fill in for others, other younger guys that aren't quite able to handle it, as he says. And he will drive once a week, and he drives basically from Southeast Iowa, from Burlington, all the way to the Minnesota border. And he still does that today. Now, my folks will take off and go for a couple of months down to Arizona. They won't leave till January 15th, because guess what? Dad always worked at least two jobs every time, everything I can. He always hung his shingle out, and he would do 500 to 600 people and business. Every, guess what? We are now. And my dad, last year, I forgot to ask him this last weekend when I saw him, but I think last year he did between 200 and 300 people's taxes at 80 years old. Now, when he talks about spreadsheet, he's not talking about Excel. It's green bar paper, and he writes it all out. But that's his methodology. And he's got people who won't quit bringing them stuff. They'll leave it on the doorstep when they get back from Arizona. He'll finally say, oh, just ship it to me. Here's my address down in Arizona. He'll start working on it when they're down there. Now, there's three things in retirement, they say. There's the go-go, the slow-go, and the no-go. Well, my dad is still kind of at 80 in the medium to slower going. They hop in the car. In 2 days, they'll drive to Arizona. Dad's got a high school friend that they stay with down there, and they've gone on cruises together. They've done different things. But my dad modeled to me from day one hard work. Now, he didn't do everything right, but boy, I tell you, he modeled that to me very, very strongly. And that is imprinted in my heart, in my mind. Grew up in Southeast Iowa, got three younger brothers. Dad, we lived in a small town, 50 acres, cornfield for the backyard that was a neighbor's farm field, and so there was a fence. I think Dad put that fence up for us boys to paint every summer. I honestly do. I think he did that. That fence, as soon as we were kind of out of, my youngest brother was out of middle school, high school area, the fence came down. No need for the fence? The paint. You know, any of you guys grew up with younger siblings? Did you have a dishwasher at home? You know, we'd ask as kids, why don't we get a dishwasher? Dad would very distinctly say, your mother has four of them. Doug, Matt, Darcy, and Ivan. As soon as Ivan, my youngest brother, went to college, the dishwasher was installed. I kid you not. Dad and Mom made sure, even though we lived in town, there were projects. The lawn to mow. We had different specific assigned things. If we were planning on eating with the family, we were going to participate with the family. That would be helping to set the table, helping to clear the table, helping Mom with stuff around the house. It seemed like my mom loved to move the furniture around the living room. I bet you we moved that every third week. And it was always us boys that got to move it. And then she'd say back, "You know, I don't like it that way. Let's try this over here." And then it'd get shuffled again. And Daddy'd come home, "Where's my chair?" It moved. Where'd it go? You know. And so I grew up with that in my upbringing, which at the time I hated it. I look back now, it was a blessing to my life. I just didn't know the long-term effects of it. Okay. Well, as we got older, I had small jobs, you know, mowing. I carried four different paper routes simultaneously for several years. The one register, which starts at early morning, you know, I'd get up at 4 because I was in basketball through middle school and stuff, and so we had basketball practice at 6. So I had to get out and do the paper route. I had the Burlington Hawkeye, which was an afternoon paper, so I'd do that starting at 4. Four on the four shift. We had the Grit. And, of course, all my brothers did, and so when somebody was going to be gone, one of the rest of us would pick it up. Bob shaking his head, he remembers those days. And then, of course, there was the fence that always needed painted. Every summer, whether it needed it or not, that fence got a painting. You know, but one thing my dad instilled in us, 50% of everything you earn, 50%. That was so good for me. And was there lots of things? I didn't really bristle against that. I have a brother that bristled against that. He wanted to go right down to the local hardware store or candy store, and it's mostly candy at early ages. And he learned, though. And by the way, he had kids that loved this. And now, as he's a dad, he's going like, no. You know, I can remember sitting at Thanksgiving a few years ago when the discussion came up about some of this. And my mom started to say something. He said, "You be quiet." And we couldn't all help but snicker watching him trying to get it, convinced his kid what was not going to happen with that money. So anyway, life goes on. But I grew up in a good family. We went to church regularly and stuff like that. But I very, very distinctly. We're going to work. You ever dig out an excavation for a footing, for a foundation or something, and there's bits of dirt that fall down in? I was the oldest and also still fairly thin and stuff. I was the one they hung down by their feet to pull out the crumbs. We call it crumbing. I was the only one that could fit down in there before the concrete truck came. And, of course, this is like midnight the night before, because it was always late. Dad always worked. You know, he was a hard worker. I mean, these projects didn't get started until, you know, 7, 8, 9 at night. I'm just dead tired as a kid. Nope. You're the one gonna come out and help. You know, oh, Dad, come on. Okay. Well, let's fast forward a few years, and I began to somewhere between the age of 13 and 14, each of us boys were responsible for buying all of our own clothes from our own earnings, and so I began to learn. Dad was good at teaching us how to handle money. My dad was born in 1933. Anybody know was going on around in the U.S. around 1933? Depression. My dad's dad left. And so my dad, at 12 and 13, was working to help put just the basic needs on the family dinner table. And so that's kind of my dad. He was not going to let us, you know, he had to learn some hard lessons early. He figured that was probably, it didn't kill him. It made him stronger, as the saying goes. So I learned some of that. I absorbed some of that. I was in the middle of it, whether I liked it or not. So fast forward, I'd earned some money. I'd saved. I had several thousand dollars in the bank when I went to Iowa State. I went to community college first, and I worked the whole time when I was in community college full time. Ivy, I can say, probably put me through. I put the hours in. They gave me a check, and I passed that check over to Iowa. Ivy put me through because I worked full time. I averaged my first 2 years of community college. There were some quarters. I took over 22 credits. Thankfully, the dean's son was a good friend of mine, and so he would sign off and let me do that. And I was on the dean's list, no problem. So, not because he was a friend or his kid was a friend of mine, but because I got good grades. Then I came to Iowa State, a whole different scenario. evolved, and it was tough, much, 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 much tougher. But the thing I want to focus on, though, is I learned to work hard from my dad, and the other thing I want to say is most of it was really about me. I didn't like, because I was tall and thin and lanky, and when you're tall and thin and you're 16 and you're growing and mom buys you new jeans or you buy jeans and all of a sudden they're like this, I was embarrassed, and it was about me. So I went out and bought new jeans. And, of course, you know, a few months later, they were like this again. And so I had, it was about me. And that was the world I was living in. It was really about me. And then I went to Iowa State, and God began to do work. Some of the guys on my dorm floor, I lived in Helzer Hall, and some of the guys on my dorm floor were having a Bible study, and I got involved in that. And I came to that understanding that I was broken. I needed a Savior. And I understood that Jesus would pay for my sin if I would accept that gift. So in November 1975, I accepted Christ as my Savior. And that began a whole new projectile. Now, I came to Iowa State with some goals and objectives and stuff. My goal was a PhD in mechanical engineering. I didn't quite get there, but that's okay. Trajectories change. What I did, though, is I got saved, and I decided I needed some time to figure out what God is doing in this new life. There's a verse I like, and I had it on, actually, you guys wouldn't believe, I had such a pile of notes of things, and I whittled it down because I thought, I looked at the actual time we had, and I thought, there is no way I can cover that much material. But it's a verse out of Timothy. It's actually out of the J.B. Phillips translation. And he says that the scriptures are the comprehensive equipment of the man of God that will equip him. And I began to realize that's my first main point. We've got to get the word of God. Psalm 119 says, how can a young man keep his way pure? By keeping it according to your word. Your word I've hidden in my heart that I will not sin against you. And so I began to dialogue with the Word, and I was with some great guys that really challenged me and came alongside and helped me in small groups and stuff. And we had what we called PGT verses, personal growth team verses, or we called them pretty good times, that there was 58 verses that we began to memorize and get into the Word of God. And it was so critical for my life. Okay. Well, at the end of that year, I thought, all this spiritual stuff is so important. And I was really behind on that. I learned a lot through that. But I spent 5.5 years working and doing things before I went back to school. Finished up an engineering degree. Worked out in Washington, D.C. for a year and a half. Went back to work for a grocery store while I continued my job search. And then ended up at EMC. And so now that's been 25 years ago. So now I'm going to fast forward to more of the how do I do some of this stuff. Because over the years, like 2 weeks ago, Denver, Colorado, I'm sitting out there, and I'm interviewing some people. We interviewed 4 different people that day. What do we look for in an interview? What qualifications and education requirements do you need? You get to a working for an insurance company, you watch what else other insurance companies do. What does State Farm's current advertisement say? We're bringing you to a better state, right? We're bringing you to a better state. You've seen that ad? Yeah. Okay, well, maybe if you haven't. That's kind of what the series of this was, is how to get you to a better state, a better position. Whether it's because you have the capabilities and the desire, or maybe it's because you're underemployed right now, or you don't have any job and no ambition, I'm not sure what I should do. I hope we can put some ideas that will help you in that process. So if I was going to wrap up my first kind of point, introduction, oh my goodness, better move, is getting in the Word is foundational, because getting to a better state starts in our mind. It starts on our view and our perspective on where we're at currently. Now, I was just interacting with a brother back here at the soundboard for a couple minutes on a verse, which was actually part of my thing, which is, you know that verse that says to give thanks always, for this is God's will for you in Christ. It does not say be thankful, for this is God's will. There is a difference between giving thanks and being thankful. I'm getting an inquisitive look. Sarah, what's your question? Yeah, I'd be glad to. That was all part of the plan. Thank you for staging right into that. Giving thanks. Choosing to say, thank you, God. I really don't care rip what if I feel thankful at this moment or not. I'm going to choose to obey. I'm going to do what God said to do. Give thanks always. Being thankful is the result of me giving thanks consistently over time. Get the difference? One is a choice of obedience. And I can give you numerous times when God was challenging the daylights out of me, and I didn't like the circumstance, I didn't like the situation. One time I got in my car and I was running out of Ames as fast as I could go, and I put the clutch in to shift to fourth gear, and the clutch didn't come back off the floor. Now, I used to work in a mechanic shop, and I knew exactly what happened. God and I had a long talk that day, and there was some screaming, and there was some shouting, and there was some crying, as God had to break me. And standing along the side of that gravel road that day, I began to understand I was not in control. As I told Brad this morning, you get into an arm wrestling with God, guess who's going to win? It will be God. And I'm learning, slowly but surely, I'm a slow learner on some of these things, I need to always give thanks. The result of years of choosing to give thanks, to obey God, will result in a thankful heart. I can't just muster up the emotion of being thankful, but I can choose to always give thanks. There's the difference. If I'm looking for the feeling, or if I'm looking for the obedience. So that helps me. Anyway. So get in the Word. Give thanks always. Proverbs. Awesome book. Just to help you get a grip on what's going on and see the world through God's perspective. I read a few biographies, too, to help get me a new perspective. And I wrote down one of D.L. Moody, was a book that a friend gave me. Tremendously inspirational. That's a huge blessing. The guy that's working down at the wastewater treatment plant, that's a huge blessing to me. I had to evaluate, as my job, I used to be a lot more on the road than what I am today, where I would be actually out doing on-site inspections and surveys of places like that. Water treatment plants, we write a lot of those. Power plants, I'm really glad we have power, gas, lights, all that stuff. And I interact with a lot of people. I'm not in that role anymore. My new boss changed that, and I had to go through quite a traumatic adjustment to how I viewed work and stuff. Now I train a lot of other people in doing what I used to do and stuff like that. So it's a different scenario. I must have been funny. So I learned it's not about me, and that's really one of the key things. Okay, everybody with me so far? Making sense? All right. Go ahead. Okay.
On the job site or wherever, you're oftentimes asked to do things that you don't want to do.
Very common. Yeah. Oh, yeah. kind of daily.
It's not a part of the job.
Oh, start complaining right away.
Yeah, I can do that.
You know, and that'll actually lead me right into probably a good, I may jump into the notes that I passed out. And the notes I passed out, I'm going to jump into that, and it ties into this. Let me see exactly where I had it. Well, the short of it, and instead of me trying to figure out exactly where it's at, the short of it is do the best at what you can. In other words, if you want to be, you know, you have to evaluate a company, and this is a little bit of where I was going to go. If this company is really a company worth working for and worth, you know, I want to improve and increase my influence and my ability to influence others in this company, what do I need to do that? Well, one of the things is do the best you can at what you're doing and find opportunities to do additional things. Because, well, some of you guys know Gabe Harris. I know you know him. Gabe is working for, used to be called Sour Dan Foss, now it's called Dan Foss, or they switched it, sorry. It's one or the other, I can't remember. Anyway, they moved Gabe from one production center to a different one. This is while he was a temporary employee, to a different one. And now he actually got on full time, and he went to a totally different thing. He was doing packaging of transmissions. They'd make hydraulic transmissions and stuff. It's really kind of a neat company. And so he was given all these different things. So when layoffs come around, the guy with the most experience that's literally very able to work in all these different areas, he's going to be held on to. And so I just sat for two and a half hours on Wednesday afternoon in our HR department with one of my employees who said, "This is not my job description." And our HR director very candidly said, "You cannot move beyond your job description until you learn to do some of these other things and do it really, really well." "Well, I want you to rewrite my job description." "That's not your choice. We'll have to look at it, but it's not your choice to demand that your boss rewrite your job description." I loved that. Oh, yeah, that's what I was wanting to tell him. But taking on extra responsibility, if a company is worth working at for the long term, take on additional things. I don't care if it's in your job description. Do the best you can. Look for opportunities to improve your skill set. And that will bless your life, one, because you're more valuable to me as an employer. And you know how I reward valuable employees? Pay raises, promotions, greater responsibilities. Yeah, that's how we reward it. We have some things. Pay isn't the only thing. Sometimes people are making enough money, they don't really need a pay. They just want to be told, "Thanks, that was a great job. I appreciate the extra work." That is really a rewarding thing, too. It gets to the inner heart. But also, I have some clerical people work for me. I have some technical people. I have other engineers. I have some of the senior engineers in our company. And when they go out of the way and pick up something over here that maybe a clerical person could or should have done or whatever, I try to make sure that they know I appreciate it because I'm an administrator. I can't do it all myself. And so I have them to do stuff so that the whole job gets done. And we work as a team. It's not just, we're not union shop. Not outside your pay grade. It's okay. And so that's what I tell them. I tell them, we all have to pitch in and help out and work together. So does that kind of help with that?
That's it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It really, oh, sorry. Thank you. It helps because when we all come into the office, we all work together as a whole. And it does. It builds a real, a team effort to accomplish, because so much of what we do in the arena that I work in affects our corporation nationwide. And so we all have to work, all functions working together. It's like a 6-cylinder and 8-cylinder engine. All the pistons got to be firing together because if I change one thing here, it affects all these other things. So we have to have everybody's input and involvement in a project because it really affects My whole department is nationwide. So I have 43 indirect reports and 5 direct reports. And if I think, well, we can do this, a lot of times our programming people will say, hey, let's change this, or we want to update this. And I say, okay, let me get the team together. Because if I change this, what does that do to this, this? And somebody will think of something I didn't even cross my mind. Oh, that's going to affect Bob Herman out in California. We need to work through this, this, and this before we do that. It's like, oh, yeah, thank you. And it makes it flow, but it sometimes takes a little longer. And so we're constantly working on team-building types of things to work. And that is so true for the body of Christ. We're working together. We've got different parts and pieces that are really, really well-functioning when it's working together. So when I look at hiring or bringing somebody, moving them, elevating their position, I look at, can they be a team player with me? That's really, really critical. What skill sets do they bring to me? Which kind of gets into, where am I at in my job? And some of you guys may have just great jobs with where you're at and that sort of thing. And so I'd ask you to take some notes, because you probably know somebody that needs some help, needs some coaching, needs some encouragement. Some of you go, I need to figure out how to move and change my position because I'm just making it, whether it's financially or I'm just really bored stiff with this job. I really need to match my skill set more with these hours that we're spending, because it is, especially for us guys, this is a major chunk of our lives. We spend so many times, so many hours at work. And honestly, most people that are that I'm aware of don't work just a 40-hour job. Mine's 50 most of the time, 45 to 50. And I commute. I commute, 40 minutes each way to and from work every day. And if you commute a little bit and stuff, it's just a big chunk of your day, of your week, of your month, of your year. And I've been at the same place for 25 years now. And thankfully, I can count on one hand the number of snow days that it was really nasty getting home. Most of the time, if it was that bad, I didn't go to work. But most of the time, it happened while I was at work. So I had, and there's been 4 days, it was like 3 hours getting home. I don't want to do that very often. But it happens now and then. But, so. Okay. Go ahead. Any conflict sharing my faith? The question is, did I have or have I had? Some, but not a lot. Part of it's my personality, I think. I'm a very easygoing type of thing. I'm also the boss of a whole herd of people. And so I'm sensitive to where they're at and stuff, but commonly I ride along or we're on trips and we get to know each other personally. And, if... I'm going to take this salt shaker. Oops. That's a little. Got salt shaker. Now, if I bump it, what happens? The salt comes out everywhere. And so when you're riding along and you're talking about just general things and stuff like that, and somebody bumps you, what comes out? Whatever's inside. And so somebody asks you, what'd you do this last weekend? Well, guess what I'm going to tell them about? You guys. I'm going to tell them about what I did. Years ago, I memorized a verse out of Romans. It says, for I am not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God for salvation. I'm not ashamed. When the cup gets bumped, salt shaker without a lid, boop, salt comes out. And so it just kind of flows out. I'll give you a short story. We hired a guy. This is in Atlanta. We hired a guy to go out and do on-site surveys for our Birmingham branch. They come up to home office in Des Moines for a few weeks. We do some training and orientation and stuff. And then we send them out there, and then we watch their paperwork. We discuss things by phone, and, of course, a lot of it's done by email and stuff now. And then I go out usually and ride with them about 2 to 3 months into their job, and I do some on-site coaching with them, how's it going, suggestions and stuff. So I'm talking with this guy, and he says, so you ever thinking about getting married and stuff? And because I knew he was single, but I don't know a lot. Well, he says, "Oh, I'm gay." Really? I didn't know that. Well, at that time, you know, we're driving around Atlanta. You're seeing churches. I mean, you're kind of in the Bible Belt of America. You're seeing churches, and one of the big themes going on at that point, a lot of churches doing, is going through this book. I'm trying to think what the name of the book is. But basically, it's where the guy says, "It's not about me." Purpose-driven life. And I had that book with me, and I'd been highlighting stuff, and I hadn't quite finished the last, I think it was 12, 15 pages. Wasn't very much. And I said, "Brent, how did you get to this point?" And we began talking and stuff. And, of course, by then he's understanding I kind of have a Christian bent to me, you know. But he's living in the Bible Belt, so that's not uncommon down there. And he said, "Oh, my mom's trying to get me out of this. I mean, the whole realm of things." I said, "Brent, I've got this book with me." We've been seeing this on several of the parquets or whatever they call it, you know, where they show, you know, purpose-driven life series going on and stuff. I said, "Would you read that book if I gave it to you?" Said, "Yeah, I would." "Okay." And so that evening when we were unpacking at the motel where we were staying at, I gave him the book. Now, it wasn't but a couple months later, he left for another job. I've never seen him since. I've never heard from him since. You know. But here in the car, I'm treating him just like I'm his boss, but I'm treating him just like a friend. And this kind of flops out and like, "Whoa, what am I going to do with this?" Okay. "Well, here's what I'm going to do. It's just, well, how'd you get there? What brought you to that?" You know, and stuff. And he told me some of his story and stuff. And so I said, I'm trying to think, okay, what would connect with him and not repel him? I'm not trying to push him off. I'm trying to draw him and redirect his life to something that would really bless him and those around him. So that was the best thing I had at that point that I thought might connect with him. Because he'd had all sorts of other people beat him up with the scriptures and stuff. And I could see that wasn't going to go where it should. And so I thought, well, here's another person's way of putting truth into this man's life. So again, it's usually not adversarial. Usually it's kind of, you know, it's just kind of fun. We're just telling our stories, who we are. So, that help? Okay. All right. Well, let me go. My first point there on what's next under that discipline is key. Is we got to get in the Word, get our life renewed, get our mind renewed, and prepare our minds for action. Set some goals was my second point. And Brad and I were talking this morning, and I'm going to read a couple things, and I'm going to stop and say, ask you to take a moment, write down, where are you at, what would help you? Set a goal or two. Just to ask, to think about it, and ponder. And if we don't do it here, it's easy to get busy and forget. So we'll do that. But I just wrote down, where do I want to be in 3 to 5 years? When I left school after I got saved, and I was out of school for 5.5 years, and I was doing maintenance remodeling work for an apartment management complex at our names. And during that time, I realized some things. I had some growing up to do. I was 21, left school, went back to school at 28. 27, 28, right in there. And I had some growing up I needed to do. And part of that was understanding, well, gee, I'd like to get married sometime. I was making what I thought was pretty good money. It was $10 an hour. And, you know, in the 70s, that was. But I also realized with what my skill set was, that was probably the tops that I'd ever do. And we had other families in our church that I realized that they were working hard, but they were limited because their skill set didn't allow them to go further. And so I began looking at that sort of thing. The second bullet I had there was, we have to embrace change. I went through something, and I was mentioning this a little earlier. I had to go through a very, very traumatic time in my career about 3.5 years ago. I came very, very close. I sat down with my boss at kind of as this was winding down, because my old boss retired. I got a new boss. He was taking a hard left with where our department was going. And some people were falling off. Some people quit. Some people bailed early on retirement. I was like, and these were all my friends, and I was in the middle of this turmoil too, and I had to embrace some change. And I can go through more of that. But I wrote down, and this is one of the things we talk about at work on a somewhat frequent basis, insanity is doing the same thing day after day and expecting a different result. You can't continue to do the same thing and expect to get anything different. If you're a farmer and you just planted beans, what are you going to get, Bob? That would be beans and wheat. Where did the wheat come from, Bob? Oh, weeds. Okay, beans and wheat. Weeds. You ain't going to get no corn unless it's from last year that somehow spilled over from the previous harvest season. Pat Sokol did such a good job of this. If you put carrots in, you're going to get carrots. And so quit putting carrots in. If you want to get corn, no more carrots. Plant corn. And you got to do the proper preparation in the field to get a good crop of corn. So don't do the same thing time and time again and expect a different result. It ain't going to work. Okay. Somebody tell me, my English, 7th grade English teacher said you ain't supposed to use ain't. So I'm going to try to stop, but that's okay. Thoughtfully write down ideas and discuss it with an older and a wiser person, i.e. get counsel. If you're going to make some changes, get some other people involved that can help you make good decisions and make good steps in the process. Now, we've all done our stupid taxes, Dave Ramsey likes. You guys familiar with Dave Ramsey? Okay. I teach or coordinate the Dave Ramsey Financial Peace University class. We all pay our stupid tax. We all do stupid things. We go back and, what was I thinking then? I wasn't thinking. I wish somebody had woke me up before I did that. But we go there and we learn from those things. Sometimes they're painful. Listen and learn. We have to be willing to be letting others have input into our lives. And write down steps that you need to take. You have to post them. Now, I brought along something I posted a number of years ago as a reminder on my mental attitude and my willingness to do something different. Now, you guys know Mrs. Borseth, right? See, I knew her before she was Mrs. Borseth. Where's Kirsten at? She had to go home. Okay. One of Kirsten's good buddies in Ames is Sandy Wigdahl. Well, Sandy's husband and I have been like best buds for years and years. His name's Jeff. Jeff, we were in, now Kirsten, Sandy, Jeff, and I were in summer LTs together out in Washington, D.C. years ago. And Jeff would say, oh, let's go this. And I'd be sitting there thinking, I don't know the roads there. This is before GPS. I'm much more bold than I used to be. I wasn't a very bold person. And Jeff would kind of like, okay. So I'd go along. And I came across this a number of years ago. Anybody kind of recognize this guy who he might be? Theodore Roosevelt, yeah. Exactly. And here's a quote. And so I keep this posted on a bulletin board next to my computer at home. It's far better to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs, even though checkered with failure, than to take rank with those poor spirits who neither enjoy much nor suffer much because they live in the gray twilight that knows no victory or defeat. It's far better for me to step out of my comfort zone and to do something different. Now, I'll tell you, my comfort zone isn't up here. But I'm wanting and willing to challenge, be taking on the challenge to do something different. And so I have to do that. And yeah, that's part of doing something different to get a different result. Okay. If I was to kind of look over these top things I wrote down there, those top bullets, I would say it's having a long-term perspective. I have to get out of just living for today. This morning I was reading in Revelations. I've started the book a couple days ago, and I was reading Revelations, and I told Brad this morning, you know, the thing that, you know, I can get so caught up in what's going on in my day-to-day life and stuff like that, I forget. These things are true. They are coming. They are coming. I must order my life accordingly. Now, do I understand all I read this morning? No. My goodness, that book is way, way, way over my theological head. But I know the Word of God is true, and it is going to come. Now, I have been thinking, I am 59 now, and I have been thinking, what have I put in place for these last 25 years? How soon might I be able to retire? What's that going to look like? And Brad keeps elbowing me, what are you going to do when you retire? I told him, I don't know. I know I'm not going to get up at 5:30 based on my alarm. I might get up because of my bladder or something else, but not because of my alarm. And I know I'm not going to drive to Des Moines every day. The end of my current no. Now, God does have a way of revealing things as we go along, but I know those two things. I may drive to Des Moines for something else, but it most likely won't be leaving at 6:03 in the morning from my house, because I'm in Des Moines usually before 7 every morning. So we have to look down the road a little further than the immediate right there. And that's kind of what, if I was going to summarize those points in our number two. What would it look like for someone needing a better job? Well, one, I'd evaluate, do I want to work in this company long term or not? Is there positions that I would like? And that somewhat is a little bit of a self-evaluation. Who has God made me? What has God given me? When I went back to school, I changed from going back in mechanical engineering because I understood more about what mechanical engineers do. A lot of them set and design stuff. And the mechanical engineering, when I was in Iowa State, had a lot of HVAC focus. Everybody know what HVAC is, right? Heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems. And so they design a lot of that stuff. I've got friends that do that. But I thought, I kind of like that stuff. I play with it. You know, I own a lot of HVAC units. But I didn't want to set and design it. I discovered in the journey, I really like coming over and sitting next to a person. How's it going, Sarah? And I like a lot of interaction. Well, most engineers interact with their computer. And I thought, maybe not quite who I am. And so I wanted to put myself in a position where I could take this skill set that I understood. As my mother used to call, you have the gift of gab. And I said, thanks, mother. I learned it from my best teachers, you. You know, I like to talk with people. I enjoy that. I like digging in deep. What's going on below the surface? And so I wanted to employ that strength and that gifting that God had given me into my job arena. Because guess what? I get paid for what I do. And the better I do at it, the better I get paid. And so I could put those things together. Kazunai. And so I went back in industrial engineering, which combines kind of the people skills and the management things with the technical skills. And look, oftentimes they manage technical people. I have some of the highest paid engineers in our company that work for me. My boss lets me know, hey, you make sure you do well. Thank you, I understand. You know. So if I want to stay in the same company and there's prospects where I can employ the gifts and things that God has given me, then what is needed? Do I need more education? Do I need experience? And how do I get there? And what steps do I need to take? Now, in my case, I have an engineering degree, but I work in the insurance industry. I never had an insurance class in my life until after I worked in the insurance industry. My most experience with insurance was I had bought a house, so I had home insurance. Had a car, so I had car insurance, and previously owned a motorcycle, so I'd had motorcycle insurance. Basic understanding, but really farly removed, way removed from that. So I had to take some educational classes, and I took some things called the Chartered Property Casualty Underwriting things, which ends up being 30 hours of exams, of which I'd never had a class, so I self-studied, and it took me about 2.5 years, which is sort of like getting a master's in insurance, basically is what it was. I had to because I work in the loss control field, protecting people and property from damage and from hurting themselves, i.e. like workers' comp and stuff like that, from things. So I needed to get certifications because we work across 50 states, and to be able to do this type of professional work, you need to be certified. So that gave me, in the engineering world, we call it the professional engineering licensing, the PE. I have the CSP, which is a certified safety professional. And you go through two different 8-hour exams for that, the CSP or the ASP for associate safety professional, and the CSP, which is certified safety. So I did a lot of studying for that. So I had to learn and go, okay, what education do I need? And then, like for my CSP, I had to have a number of years' experience in the field prior to being able to set for the exam, and then the exams were 8 hours apiece. So they're a little bit of work. But I have to ask the question, how do I get there? Well, I need some experience. I need to continue to work in the job I was at. And I need to study. I need to get the education. So maybe there's some things like that that you want to look at and consider. If you want to work in a different location or a different type of job, work on your resume. That's the starting point. You might have to do some research. Well, I think I'd like something like that. And you might have to do some types of skill analysis or do some web research, find out what does this person really do? I oftentimes, somebody tells me, I want to be an engineer. Well, what kind? Well, I really don't know. So I take them and I go visit with a guy, a friend of mine who's Kent, Maine, who does one type of engineering. And I take them along and see if I can't work out something with my friend Jeff and Sandy Wigdahl and say, Jeff, explain what you do at John Deere as a mechanical engineer working on cotton pickers. Say, he's got the best cotton picking job you ever had. And I talk with others, like I work as an industrial engineer, but I work in insurance. And so I talk to them about what I do, and I give them a picture. Day by day, here's what I do. Jeff will tell them, here's what he does. Kent Maine has told guys, here's what he does. And as living around Iowa State, I get a lot of opportunities to interact with people about what their interests are and what how it might fit in through a career path. And then what steps? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, I think there are several things. I would go back to it's how you conduct yourself. And I used to be kind of pretty fearful, intimidated, and I still can be. But I've learned, one is, well, what has God given with me? God says he is with me, even to the end of my life, into the age. And so that's a part of conducting myself with integrity before God. Like, God is with me. I can walk through these things, and I can apply what I've learned so far to being successful in new arenas. But that's part of it. The other one is asking questions with people and letting them help you, okay, identify what's your fear. Is it real or imagined? There are real fears. I mean, I shouldn't be driving 110 on a mountain road. You know, that's just, that's a real fear. You will die. Those guardrails are only made to handle, say, 80 mile an hour, and you're doing 110, so it's just like a slingshot over the cliff. That should be a real fear, and you should back off and not drive 110. But imagine fears are, okay, what steps can we do? How can we address those and help people walk through? And sometimes we have to, let's say conflict resolution or something. Sometimes you have to join with them in the process. Does that help kind of?
Yeah.
Because you have to break it down into what's really going on. Because there's some things we really should be afraid. I don't mind sitting down on this chair because I'm going to guess somebody sat on it before a number of times. But if you've got a new designer and he's just now learning to design something, I might want to check it over, make sure the welds are good, make sure it's designed rightly, because I don't want to end up with my butt in the floor. So, okay?
Sarah.
And that's a great point. And actually, as you'll look through, and we may not have time to finish all these points here, which is fine. I'm okay. That's why I put them there, because I know I can get talking and I can wander a little bit. So I wanted to make sure you got them. We are in a much tougher economy than we have been for a number of years. So it means you have to be as sharp and good as you can be in the job search these days. So do your best. Have people look over your resumes and determine what you're doing. But invest the time when you're underemployed or something like that. Invest the time that you have to increase your knowledge level and your skill level, to make yourself as marketable as possible, so that when that next opportunity opens up, you've got the right stuff to put in place and make it happen. So I think of investing for me is, I got my CPCU a number of years ago. My boss said, hey, this is a good idea. It's not required, but it's a good idea. But to be in the position I'm in now, where I work with all of our branch management operations nationwide, and they're all vice presidents and senior vice presidents and stuff above my pay grade, but I have the certifications that are required to do their jobs. And so that allows me to talk in the language. Insurance has its own language, just like engineering has its own language, just like real estate. If we were to talk about escrow accounts and all this, you would know exactly what I'm talking about. Closing dates, etc. But insurance has its own language too. And so I not only know the language, but I understand it and I dialogue with them on their level, which allowed me to move into my position and to do it very, very successfully. So just utilizing anything you can along the way in the process, in the journey. Yes, work at McDonald's, work at Hy-Vee, be there on time, every time, always. Stay longer when you're asked. I used to work at Hy-Vee a lot. I don't think there was ever a time I was late. And I was commuting 12 miles away because that's where my family lived. But things to do, just be the best where you are. Even if it's starting out what seems like, honestly, if I had stayed working at Hy-Vee, they asked me if I would be an assistant manager opening a new store. This is right before I transferred to Iowa State, and I still wanted my engineering degree. I said, no, I'd probably be making double if I'd stayed working at Hy-Vee than I am now. But I'd be working a lot more hours than I am now. Hy-Vee managers make a lot of money. Now, the margin on a grocery thing, at least it used to be, was a little less than a penny per dollar sold. So when somebody goes down and breaks, as a good friend of mine did, he was pushing a thing, and this is back when pop was in the glass jars, and he stopped the cart, and this whole stack of pop, and glass flies everywhere. You know how many thousands of dollars we had to sell to make up for what he just broke? A lot. But they sell the volume, and they sell huge volume. So the thing is, do the best at what you can get. Be the best that you can be there. Always be on time. If there's extra time needed to finish a project or something, stay there a little longer. Make your boss successful. You will be the one that they'll say, would you help out with this? It gives you a broader and broader skill set, allowing you to be the person that when something new pops up, we need a new manager, we're opening a new department in the grocery store, we're opening something new, we need somebody to head this up, bingo. They go to the person that they could count on, that was there, that didn't complain, that worked hard. That takes you the extra mile. And in this type of economy, that is stellar. They, for the last several years, industry has not added employees. What have they done? They've added hours to the existing employees. And commonly it was without overtime, if you were salaried. I had hours added to me. When I got my new boss, I had to plan on 5 to 10 hours more per week. And I looked at my budgets and everything. I said, I can't afford to retire yet. can't replace my job. I'm a highly compensated officer. But, so I'm going to put in these extra hours, and I'm going to like it. I had to give a lot of thanks. I didn't feel very thankful. But I made a choice, and it has honestly so blessed my life. It deepened my understanding in a number of areas of my life. I'm so glad God is not a slave driver.
So, Doug, we are
yes. Yes. Let's do that. The rest of my notes are here. Tim can give you an email if you want to email me and ask questions. Let's do this. And this video, thank you, Tim, for reminding me of that. This video, I was in Denver doing interviews. We have a person that's retiring and doing interviews, and this was on the news the night before I was doing the interviews. I just about cried listening to it. Here was a guy who was many difficulties. I'm not going to take away the thing.